Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. Today we have with us Greg Doctor, but first before we bring Greg online on the call here, I want to make a couple announcements. I'm just checking my schedule here. The next show, we're going to skip next weekend, but our next show will be on March 20th. That's a Sunday, same time, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. We're going to have with us Mary Aquindo. A lot of you may know her from her GroomWise blog on pet first aid care. She's going to cover salon planning for emergencies and first aid in those situations and disaster planning even for your salon. Good topic. She writes on it well, and she is certified in this type of training. So it's a show not to miss or listen to once it's recorded, and we'll make it available to you. There's a couple things going on popular right now over at PetGroomer.com. We have the all-new Power Grip from Wahl. It's a corded, very powerful, brand-new clipper. We've got two of them, and so we're having one of our Pay It Forward contests. Come over to Groomer Talk Community. Just go to PetGroomer.com. You'll find your way to the community. There's a link there. Every time you post a message on the board, anytime during the month of March, you're automatically entered in this contest. If you win, you get to have a brand new Power Grip clipper for you, and you get to pay one forward. Perhaps a groomer in need, maybe a rescue, pet welfare association, someone. You get to choose, and we'll get them another clipper. And we thank Wahl at wahlanimal.com for making these clippers available. And just so you know, in April, we'll be having a similar contest, but we'll be giving away gallons of Madramore muds. And if you haven't tried those, pretty remarkable results coming about, especially with, in my experience even now, yeasty skin and issues. Pretty amazing the turnarounds we're seeing from this. So let me get back over here, and we're going to bring on Greg. Now, for those of you that probably are aware of the Merrifield School in Florida, and Greg is a key person behind this. Greg's had over 30 years' experience in the pet industry. His father was responsible for more than 250 retail outlets called Dr. Pet Centers. He is has had his own stores, three chain stores for Just for Paws and Merrifield Kennels. If you haven't seen the Merrifield operation at their website, it's Merrifield School, all one word, .com. And I think you're going to find we're going to gear this show a little bit to, because we get a lot of questions, how does one open a school? But we want also, I've been getting a lot of questions emailed to me from students that want to ask Greg some questions, which I have here. They sent me by email and want to ask questions about what's it like going to the Merrifield School. So I'm going to pose those. So it's not just about opening the school. This is a show for both the career seeker and those groomers that have an interest in perhaps opening the school sometimes down line later in your career or now. And now, if anyone who's listening live to the call, what we have is a way for you to let us know you have a question for Greg, and we'll bring you on live. All you have to do is press 1 on your keypad of the telephone. That sends me a flag that I have someone with a question. Be patient. We'll get to those as we go along. It won't immediately put you online. I will open your access. So you just start by pressing 1 on the keypad, and we will get you in queue for questions for Greg. So let's bring on Greg. Hold. Hello, Greg. Are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me on your show. It's really a pleasure to be there.
Yes, great. I want you to tell us a little bit more about your background and what led you, obviously probably family, into the pet industry, but what led you to then come into the educational side?
Well, I've been at Merrifield for 44 years, not 30. I hate to say that because it seems so crazy, 44 years. It's like it was yesterday. But anyway, I am the third generation. My father and my grandfather were both in it. And in various different avenues in it, whether it was manufacturing, distributing, retailing, kind of had a real interest in and involvement in all of it. The other part of your question is what made me get involved with a school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had initially, in 74, I started it because I wanted more traffic in my facility. I know it's kind of a reversed reason, but that was the honest reason why I started it. But when I started to really get into it, it was a lot more complicated than that. So anyway, I ran a school from 74 to 86. I stopped. I rested for 20 years. I went back into it in 2006. It's not like I rested for 20 years. I was involved in other parts of the industry. But I did come back in 2006. And this newborn school, I guess, it was just so much far superior than what I had before. Because I decided this time to try to find some of the top people in the industry to teach. And it made a really big difference, radical difference, in the students' end product. My student, my graduate, it was just their skill level, their skill sets were so far superior than we've ever had it before. Any other questions?
Sure. Now,
or did I answer that correctly?
Yeah, you did. Now let people know why we've got you on this. Now, at the Merrifield School right now, you also are offering other services to pet owners. There's the kennels there. Is that correct?
Right, right. So we have the school, which is the main part of our business. But Merrifield Motel for Pets was originally built in 61. My brother and my father, may they both rest in peace, we bought it in 72. And we had our own designs and things that we wanted to do it. But what still remains today is I still have a motel. I have about 40 or 50 suites still here. I've converted a lot of the areas of that we had our suites into classroom space. So I'm slowly, I guess, driving myself out of the motel business because the school's gotten so much larger. This is an approximately a 16,000 square foot facility. So there's a lot of room here. And so we board pets. The suites are in 5.5. The suites are 5.5 by 9. Overhead fan. It's air conditioned. It's tiled. We walk them 2, 3, 4 times a day. And there's people that live here because we have 2 apartments that are here. And so that continues. I never advertise it. It's one of those little secrets. And then we stay pretty full. So that's the other part of it. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I wanted you to finish. I thought you were finished there. I wanted to say that. To me, has to help the school in a way, though, one would think, by, I know there are people that will go to a school and find out they just don't have a lot of dogs some days, but I would think because you have a larger operation and you're offering these other pet care services, does that bring clientele so that people have more chances to work hands-on with dogs?
No. The key behind how the school functions with the dogs, because this is a hands-on, practical approach to learning. It's a 600-clock-hour hands-on program, is I'm a beauty school for dogs. So what I did is I radically reduced the cost of grooming. Now, I will have grooming at $20 to to $45. And sometimes it's free. It's free to any rescue organization that's a what we call a 501c3, an authorized rescue, never a charge. In fact, we even take students to a local rescue set up there. In fact, we've done this now two or three times. We took five students and instructor, tables, dryers, everything set up in a rescue, and groomed their dogs at no charge. So that's also really an important thing. You know, you have to pay it forward, and if these dogs look better, they're going to be adopted much more quickly.
That's right. That's great. So at your school, you have plenty of clientele for the students.
Well, we groom an average.
I'm bringing this up because it's a big complaint. We hear this on the message board, and we try to warn students ahead, try to find out, because it's pretty sad to hear. You pay a substantial sum, and then there's sometimes two and three students sharing the same dog all the time, not just a kid.
Well, the answer to that problem is that management of that school has to bite the bullet and not play professional salon and grooming school at the same time. Do inexpensive grooming. Okay,
uh-huh.
What's the purpose of being a school is to educate your students. Okay, so you need to educate them. Make sure you have your raw materials there. Make sure the dogs are there. If you give it away, look, I started sometimes, I would groom dogs at $10 a piece. It doesn't matter. I give it away. I need the dogs for the students.
Mm-hmm.
That's a priority. My income cannot be derived from that grooming. It has to be from the tuitions. And they have to have those dogs for those students to work on, or the whole thing just falls apart. If you're going to be a practical, hands-on approach to education, have those dogs. There is no excuse.
How rewarding is it for you to be on the educational side?
Well, you know, this may sound trite and repetitive because you probably hear it all the time, but, you know, I am really responsible for changing people's lives. I mean, I really see it. I'm taking somebody that has either been in industry, corporate for 20 years, hates it, wants to get out, loves dogs, comes into our school, gets the education, gets the skills down. They're so happy. You have no idea. I mean, I have people in business over 30 years. So I am getting the feedback from them. And this, our industry gives somebody a really long life in a field that they've chosen to be in. It's not like they get burned out. Like I watched and witnessed people that go into massage therapy. I have a dear friend that said, and she says her body is killed, okay, because of what she's doing. Now, I know some groomers, if they're not careful, some groomers are not paying attention to the ergonomics of what they do. It's like their tables are wrong. Like, for example, get a good – I really love the pet lift table. And I know I'm giving her a good plug, and it's so – Nancy, it's so worth it. But if you get that table high enough so you're not bending over – you know, get a good clippers that are ergonomically designed so they fit in your hand. Get a good shear so that the handles of the shears are fit right so it makes it comfortable. Be aware of your wrist and not bending it. You know, there are little things that you can do that will make your involvement in the industry last, and you're not going to hurt yourself.
Great. Now, I want to help some of the people with a little bit of advice on that want to open a school. Already I think you've helped now with the questions of how they can get the quantity and get the pets in there so they don't have
sure.
that problem. That's great to hear. How about square feet? What sort of plans or configurations and square footage and all should a school be?
Well, you know, I'm going to make a declaration. You ready?
Uh-huh.
So we've decided now to open up another school, our second campus. We are a federally accredited school, so we can give federal grants and loans to students that qualify for it, like any college. And I've just been given permission now to open up additional campuses. So I had to really think about how to do this. So the first time I drew out a facility that would be about 5,000 square feet, And then I looked at it again and said, you know, why need 5,000? Can we not do it in 25 or 3,000 to make it my overhead? I mean, be very sensitive to my overhead costs because, you know, you can always make it bigger. It's a matter of then your costs get a little bit more, obviously, because you're in a bigger space. So I drew out another set of plans. What I try to do in these plans is to make it like a mobile home, like everything has a place, and it could have two purposes in use. When you're developing a school, you need your classroom, and you need to have a good 15 to 20 tables because of the economics of running a school. You need a good drying area that can be separated, if you can, from your grooming area because of the noise factor and distractions. Not that there's always a viable possibility, but in my second design, I was able to do that. And that drying area could double as a library, okay, when it's not being used. And there's a drawing that we did and how we, like, for example, put drop-down desks and things like that so we could utilize space. I mean, we're double-dutying the space for the school. You need an administrative office. You need a financial aid office. You need reception area. You need a student lounge. So there's many different factors. So second, now remember, this facility in Fort Lauderdale is radically larger because I also had an animal hospital here as well. I have a full animal hospital. Got to a little mention of that one. But I stopped leasing it out to veterinarians because the school was encroaching on the space here, and we needed the space, so I stopped leasing it out. But again, opening up other branch locations, I have to be very mindful of our space. I hope I answered that correctly.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right. Now, so someone could scale that back a little bit if they're in a smaller town. Sometimes I get some people say, I'm okay if I'm just going to do a few students and whatever. So it would still work.
Well, that's
a scale-down
base. That's a danger.
Okay.
The danger is that if you try to do two or three students financially, you'll never be able to survive. Okay, you need to be able to have a good 10, 15, 20 students. Like Maryfield School of Pet Grooming last year had 130 students that went through the program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I was able to triple the amount of students that could come into the school once I got my federal financial aid, because the issue with most schools is that they may have a great curriculum, but the student can't afford the tuition. So, you know, if they can't afford it, how good is the curriculum? How good is everything that you're doing if you can't do it? That's why I went through the heartache of federal accreditation. It was a six-year process. I never got involved in a project that took me 6 years to go through. I thought I was going to, you know, hang myself, but it was worth it. It was a struggle. It was worth it. We did it.
Uh-huh.
And that's why there's not a lot of schools in the country doing what I did, because it's just this process is just so time-consuming, expensive, and you start to have a lot of self-doubt of what am I doing. But I will make also another statement saying that if there are people that are interested in going forward in a school and seeking federal accreditation, I'm more than willing to assist and help because the industry needs good schools. So here's what I did that was radically different. I decided, like, who should be teaching my students? And like any college, if you are teaching a program that culminates in a bachelor's, you have somebody that's teaching that has a master's. Okay, if you have somebody if you have a program that's master's as the end result, a PhD or a doctorate must be teaching those classes. So I decided that the best way to emulate that process was let them be national certified master groomers through any of the different voluntary certification services or groups that are out there. NDGAA happens to be, in my opinion, probably the largest and most accessible to a lot of people. So all of my staff are all NDGAA, National Certified Master Groomers, okay, because I want to make sure that if somebody is going to be taught by somebody else, that person that got that National Certified Master Groomer status took the time, energy, effort, expense, money, and really got into what they're doing. And it is working. Now, I went a step further. I got some big shots in the industry that I that had a real, really desire to teach. Some of my staff you may know. You know, Michael Lamb, he's been showing dogs for a billion years. He has over 200 dogs that he's created AKC champion status on. Irina Pinkusevich, Pina. She's most people know who she is, and she's just amazing credentials. You know, the awards, the money that she's won, the expertise that she has. A delightful individual. Joanne Marino, another one, 30 years experience in the industry. Jessica Wallace, Bridget Scalzetti, Josh Morales, Lulu Rodriguez, Bill Jividen. All of my instructors are all national certified master groomers, and as a result of that, my students have come in first, second, and third places in national competitions for 10 years in a row. So that's the verification to me that the teaching staff is spot on what we're doing. And what we have done, so there's no secrets to what we're doing here, is we are teaching to two standards, AKC, obviously, for show grooming, and the NDGAA. So what we've done is we've infused show grooming technique into professional pet grooming. We're making the dogs pop, okay? And that's what we're doing. That's what's making us different. And in order to do that, I've got to get people that have that kind of background to teach this properly. That's the whole essence of what we're doing. And these people are out there. You'll have people that own salons that are national certified master groomers. And their next natural step is maybe they'll teach a day or two. And they'll be thrilled. And, well, let me put it, and they are thrilled, okay, to do it. And it's a feather in their cap, and it's the way that they, you know, preserve who they are in our industry.
Did I answer that? Sort of, yes, you did. And so,
okay.
What sort of a ratio that we have between an instructor and the number of students that
okay.
you prefer?
Normally, our stated student-teacher ratio is 1 to 10. Okay? And I'm that's our stated. Now, we're normally about 1 to 8 or 1 to 9, but that's what it is, 1 to 10. Anything over 1 to 10, a teacher will come up to me and just, you know, choke me to death. They only have, you know, so many eyeballs to do this properly.
Uh-huh.
And you've got to remember, when we're recruiting students, it's not like we recruit, you know, 50 students to start a class. I'm recruiting anywhere from 5 to 10 people. We start on a monthly basis. So I have, you know, 5 to 10 new people starting a month. And we mainstream them. So that means that a student that may be there for 4 months is in the same classroom the student just starting. So the advantage to that is that a newbie will see issues that they're dealing with and see how a more advanced student handled it. Because every dog is different. You know, every situation is always different. So it's not a uniform thing going on all at the same time. And that works out extremely well. So as
right.
as a school, you can be recruiting all the time and starting new classes. Now, we start the first Monday of each month. So that works out well.
All right. How did you come up with 600 hours as your course?
Several things. Experience, and also the federal government will not allow a school to become accredited unless there are at least 600 clock hours. So the feds knew what they were talking about. And it really takes – I've had this program in its infancy – at lesser hours before I was accredited. This must be 74, that's a few years back. Okay, 75, 76. I realized that a shorter period of time did not give enough face time to those students to get their skill sets under their belt. It just wasn't enough. Now, I had at one time the program at 1,000 hours because I had this brilliant idea that if we added more time, students' speed would increase. Okay, because everybody's always, you know, very concerned, am I fast enough? Well, the reality was is that it didn't, okay? But when they graduated school and they're out in the real world, it's amazing how much faster they became because, you know, dollars is dollars.
Right.
So that was their motivation, to make the money. They picked up their speed. So I'd say about 4 months out of school, they really, really are where we all know they should be.
I agree. That when I used to work a lot one-on-one talking with Melissa Verplanken, of course still do, but she agreed with that same number, which was around 600. And what we found that as the economy went down, more and more of some of these other schools, obviously not accredited, because they were cutting back to 250, 300 hours, and that had to put a strain on some of them to try to get a student out with enough knowledge and experience with half the hours.
The issue is that it's not enough. The student doesn't know any better, okay, if they're putting in 200 or 250 hours. They just don't know. When they get out there and they fall on their faces, okay, because they're woefully undereducated, that's when the backlash to that school will occur because they're unprepared. You know, I don't have that issue of people being unprepared. I have more job opportunities available for my graduates than I get grads to fill jobs, and it's been that way forever. Now, why is that? Because I got them well prepared.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in my program, even though it's a 600 clock hour program, they're allowed up to 900 hours. There's no additional cost. They're allowed up to 900 hours.
Okay,
and I have an open door policy that if you're out there for 2 or 3 years and you don't feel right about something, come back to school. We'll retweak you up and make sure you're spot on what you're doing.
That's great, Greg.
There's
I didn't know that aspect. That, yeah, that's a great policy. I like that very much. You know, go ahead.
It makes a lot of sense for a school. It makes a lot of sense for the reputation of the school, the integrity of the school, and I want my grads to feel very comfortable in what they're doing and never feel that they were just kind of pushed out. Never. It never happens.
All right. You know, I find one of the biggest confusions of career seekers, and it's going to probably apply to more other trades even outside of this, is not knowing the difference between what state licensing is of a school versus accreditation. So I will see him even talk on the message board sometime and say, I'm thinking about this school, and it's accredited, and I know it's not because there's very few accredited schools out there, and I in particular know. Could you just briefly tell our listeners what's the difference between state licensing and accreditation?
Sure. So I'll explain for the state of Florida. And not every state in the country this applies to, but the state of Florida, if you're going to be teaching a career, you must be licensed, okay? And there's 12 or 15 standards that, in fact, when I'm opening up the school in Orlando, I have to go through another provisional licensing. So here's some of the items I have to go over. So I have to have my Secretary of State documentation, the corporation, my instructional and administrative personnel forms, transmittal of criminal justice information, organizational chart, program outline, application for admission and enrollment agreements, enrollment agreement checklist, your refund policy checklist, financial statements, there's a financial statement checklist, faculty listing, faculty handbook, institutional catalog, advertising, lease agreements and documentation showing ownership of the facilities, zoning compliance, accreditation status, et cetera. And this goes on to maybe 25 or 30 things that I have to do just to open up this other branch campus. Now, that's for the state of Florida. That's what they require. So in order for me to teach, I must have a state license. The accreditation process is another whole, that's the six-year thing that I went through. And the purpose of that, let's see, the purpose of that was really for twofold. One, you're really peer-reviewed by educators on your ability to deliver an education, the educational delivery process. Okay, it's rigorous. You must have a great syllabus, which we do. You must have accountability and transparency in everything that you do. And once you've gone through the accreditation process, that gives you the eligibility to make application to the Department of Education to be included in Title IV funding, which is about the student loans, which took me another, was that included in the 6 years? Maybe it was included in 6 years. Yeah. So it's your state licensing, your accreditation, and I'm accredited by the ACCSC, and there are other accreditors, but this is the accreditation that we chose. And then once that's completed, your application to the Department of Education to allow you to participate in federal funds. And that was the other reason, because, again, I had this great program, but if the student cannot afford to come to school, then how good is the program? It's the age-old story when people go buy a car. I don't care how much a car is. What's my monthly payment? It's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for student loans, they have up to 10 years to pay it back, and the interest rates are really low, and, you know, this is part of the political process of lowering student interest rates further, which I'm sure it'll happen. But, you know, that's what it's about.
Excellent.
And it's critical for a school to have it.
Yeah. It used to be, at least on the West Coast, that you had to be successful as a school for at least 2 years with the state, and then you could start the accreditation process. Is something like that still in place?
It is absolutely. You're spot on. Yes, you must run your school for 2 years, okay? That's a prerequisite that's required before you can make application to most accrediting agencies. They want to see that you can walk and talk at the same time.
Uh-huh. Sure.
You know, can you run a school? Now, of course, you're running a school without any kind of financial assistance from the feds, but there are other financing agencies out there, and which will help a student. I mean, it's conventional financing. It's credit-based financing. There's other, you know, and then sometimes a school can do its own financing. So that's where the amount of students are very important, because if you don't have enough students going through and you don't have that monthly flow of cash, you wind up in a pickle because you don't have enough cash flow to pay your bills. So if you have two or three students and try to do this, it won't work. You need a quantity of students. You have to have enough guts, and I guess that really means is your curriculum strong enough? Are the people that are there well-known enough, even your instructors, to get the ball in motion? I mean, it's a real critical, you know, it's like that clock, that big handle of that clock's finally starting to spin around.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting way you've got to get it done, but it can be done, and I'm doing it, and I did it, and I'm doing it again.
Let me ask if you've had this experience, especially since you've had accreditation and offering assistance to students for a long time. I had one school owner that did have that. This was a good 10 years ago. And just said, you know, we're keeping it. It's great. It's working. But I'm speaking for that person, that I had to learn how to filter out some of the students that I thought, because assistance is available, that they're just sort of, well, maybe I like this grooming thing and I'll try it. And they weren't as serious as people that had to find private financing or something. Is there any sense to that?
Well, here's another thing that I do. You know, the process of interviewing, like if you go to a major university, they really ring you out as far as the admission process goes. And the reason why they do that is that if a school has too many dropouts, the feds say, well, what's going on here? Why are there so many dropouts? We're fearful that if you have all these dropouts, these students are not going to pay their loans. And if they're not, if your dropout rate's too high, you're going to lose your opportunity to be involved in Title IV funds, which gives students the student loans. So the way I've avoided a lot of that, and you can't avoid it all, excuse me, is I allow a prospective student to spend 2 weeks with us. There's no charge. Let them spend some time here. You know, they may like dogs, and they think they really like dogs, and they get in and say, oh, my God, I'll never be able to do this. The dog just pooped on the table, you know, and they freak out. You know what I mean? Because these things happen.
Sure.
So the best way for us was to do this. It works out really well. It filters out people that, you know, thought they'd like it, and maybe, they don't. Okay? It's too radical a difference between what they were in a past life and what they want to do now. And I also have a pro rata refund up to 50% of the program. So that means if a student comes to school and they get involved, and they say they put 100 hours in, they come to the conclusion they don't like it, they're charged for 100 hours worth, and anything that was paid over and above, that's refunded back to the loan source to them or whoever it goes to.
Right.
So it makes it very, very fair and equitable. Now, once they go over the 300 clock hour mark, then the school has earned its tuition, and there is no refund. And if they drop out after 300 hours, I'm going to go and wring their necks, because what are they doing?
Uh-huh. Okay. Let's move over. Our first half hour is already gone. I want to ask some questions that came in from students, and let me just go down here because you've already answered. So I want to say there to Eddie in Kentucky, you got your answer about the difference between licensing and accreditation. Veronica, you were in Maryland, so you answered her question too, and that was about how much is hands-on. You're very hands-on, is what I'm hearing at Merryfield.
We're 100% hands-on.
Okay. Do you actually give them any kind of written materials and all that might come up?
Oh, yeah, sure. There's homework.
Okay. And I know you mentioned that you had a demand for groomers for jobs and all. So that's Linda in Massachusetts was asking. Why don't you maybe give her some more details? How do you help students find jobs once they are done?
Well, it's incumbent upon any licensed school as well as an accredited school to have an active job placement service. Because if your student is not successfully in business for themselves or working for somebody else, if that ratio is too high of non, let's see, how do I phrase that? If you've trained somebody and they're not working, something's up, and the feds look at that as well. And if that percentage is too high, you're going to lose your accreditation. Now, so that goes to the other side of the equation. Are you offering a skill that's viable and that's in demand? Okay, and fortunately, look, I think it's a quote from you. The single biggest impediment facing the industry today is the inability to find good qualified help. And that's been a process that's been going on forever. I think that was your quote. If I don't remember. It was, wasn't it?
You do hear me say that, yes.
Okay. So, and that's an issue. So in our situation, like I said, what I'm doing, I've had salons, veterinarians, Petco, PetSmart, VCA Animal Hospitals have all called me for my graduates. Some of them have their own little programs, but they call me for my grads because they see the quality of the graduate I'm creating. And I have to be very accountable. This is not, smoke and mirrors. It has to be. They have to be spot on, or it's not going to work. You can't hide when you're in an accredited school. It's very, very transparent. If somebody is not doing it right, they get their tail back in here and we do it right. Or they stay longer in the program until they do have it correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right. The integrity of the school and commitment that I've made with people coming in the industry, and that's the thrill and joy that I get when I see these people out there in businesses working well, call me up and tell me I'm so dog tired, okay, I'm being worked to death. I said, that's a tough thing, huh? You're making lots of money, it's good, it's working, you're tired. We laugh.
Great. Lydia in South Carolina wants to know, how do you judge what disabilities someone may have, whether it's appropriate for grooming? Do you test them? Do you have some guidelines, or how do you handle that?
That's a good question. So the answer to that is that we are an approved vendor, that's what they call it, for vocational rehabilitation in the state of Florida. Now, it may be called something else in other states, and I may be misinterpreting the question, but I think I got it. And so these are people that have issues. They may be physical issues. They may be emotional or mental issues. And when I get a student like that, obviously if the physical issues that would not allow them to groom, meaning they may have coordination things and things like that going on, then once they have a chance to see what's going on, we come to the conclusion whether it's appropriate for that. I don't get too much of that. But I will get people that have emotional issues that may be bipolar, may have other emotional things going on, that as long as they are, under a proper doctor's care, some disabilities on one end of the spectrum are great abilities on the other end of the spectrum. Sometimes these people, I would say most times these people, have a real sensitivity to animals. They know how to talk dog before I have to teach them how to talk dog. If that's what the question she's asking, hopefully I answered correctly. If I misinterpret the question, they ask it again, I'll try it again.
That was good. And my comment on that, too, I had a little bit of experience there where with a school that was opening in California, this was like 15 years ago, we even had to show them, they had to take state-approved, just basic math tests and things that was required in California. But we actually showed them flashcards to make sure they could see certain colors. dogs come in a lot of colors, and they.
Well, you know what it is. You must be a high school graduate today. Okay, you can't even have. There's another thing called ability to benefit tests, but the feds in the state of Florida don't allow that anymore. So you must be a high school graduate. Part of what we have to do here is verify and confirm that they're high school graduates. When I have people that are coming in from other parts of the world, I have to have their high school diplomas translated and verified through a third party to validate it, because these people may want federal funds. So there's no bogus high school diplomas. We have lists of fake high schools, okay, and diploma mills. So you can't mess around with this stuff.
You know, in some ways, talking with you and someone who's meeting these extra requirements of someone that is accredited, it actually, to me, in a way, it would sort of be, if you just put the federal financing off to the side, I think it makes for a better school to be under that pressure, because you can still, unless you get a tremendous amount of complaints, you can still be a state-licensed school. Some states are pretty lax until, well, you know what, now we're getting 40% trouble, you know, students
mm-hmm.
coming to us. But really, the pressure that you have to keep in the long run sounds like it's a great pressure for the consumer.
It's excellent for the student. Look, you either got to do it correctly or you don't do it. Okay, and I was willing to jump in and see what it's doing is it's elevating the industry. Okay, I've got to make sure that my educational delivery is spot on. Because if it's not, I've got to answer to my state of Florida, my accrediting commission, federal government. There's three layers of oversight and two more additional layers of audit. Okay, I have a separate auditing agency that comes in here every year, and my state audits. Five layers of government. There is no industry that has five layers of oversight. Okay, but that's what I decided to jump in and do. That's why education gets expensive, because there's so much stuff that needs to be done.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? I take it on, and I have the opportunity to do it. The end result is my graduates. You really have to, you know, you really have to take a second step backwards about the money, you know, that you're earning, because it's really, if you really in your heart don't think it's about the student first, then you're making a mistake. It's got to be about that student first.
Excellent. Greg, do you ever still do some extra events or workshops associated with the NDGA or anything?
Yeah, in fact, we just had a certification. So here's what I do. I allow at no charge NDGA once a year to come down, and if they want to come down, more than welcome to come in and use my facility there's never a charge, use my facility to do certifications. I just had Judy Routley, NDGA groomer, who does CPR. She came in, I think there were 18 students today that took her CPR classes. So if there are other people out there that have a viable program they'd like to offer, you know, for a day or two, whatever it is, we'll work out and see if it makes sense, if it's credible, does it pass the litmus test of what I have to do here, and they're more than welcome to offer what they need to offer. Like, oh, here's another example. One of my graduates is doing a creative grooming class, you know, doing the pet carving. I don't know, there may be a different name for it, where they carve in a rose into a short-coated dog, and then they'll offset it with color, which is like if we take these short-haired dogs that only get a bath and nails are cut, here's another whole grooming aspect and other market that nobody's touching. So she's coming, I think, right after the Atlanta show to run this class. It may be a two-day thing. So, yeah, we have other little things. I do not have a curriculum set up for people that are out there for years and want to do something else to improve their skill set, because, unfortunately, that market is not big enough, and I'd have to go through the approval process with my state agency and my accrediting agency to offer this, and financially it wouldn't work out. That's why NDGA and others that offer special certifications and their mini seminars is the best continuing education that I see for the industry at the moment.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. That mm-hmm. last question, just to put it out there, Carol in Alabama, that was your answer. So when you listen to the show, you just found out. And I'm sure everyone can check with the website. Now, why don't you go ahead? We're going to bring this call to a show here. But why don't you tell people how to get a hold of the Merrifield School?
Oh, sure. You call me. My name is Greg. My phone number is, let's see, let me give the 800 number. That makes most sense right now. Is 1-800-361-4548. Obviously, you can go on the internet. There's another shorter web address. So it's merrifield.edu. And you don't get that EDU designation unless you're a federally accredited school. And Merrifield is spelled MERRYFIELD.EDU. You'll see my ugly face explain the program three different ways on the homepage. And it's a pretty in-depth site. You'll learn more about the instructors. There's a school catalog up there. So you get a kind of a feel of what's going on here. I'm always available. I am totally committed to my school. It's thrilling. Okay, it's really thrilling to be involved with this. The caliber of my personnel, whether it's my registrar, whether it's my instructors, excuse me, financial aid administrators, they're really some really committed people. It's a real loving group, and we're doing a good job, and it's evidenced by my grads and what's happening. I think I have 9 or 10 national certified master groomers of students that went through our program now. I had one, her name is Blancy Torres. She became a National Certified Master Groomer prior to graduation. This young lady hustled around the country, took the tests, did it before she graduated, which I've never seen anybody do that. But it wouldn't have happened unless she had the quality of instruction.
This was actually very interesting. I think it's going to help especially a lot of the career seekers to better understand, because one thing's for sure, they have a lot of options out there, because we haven't even yet standardize what is the training of a groomer in any state yet. That's why there's no state licensing or anything, which is another big subject that goes out there. But you've got something that's really working, and that's great for the...
You know, another subject for another show may be that how do we compare and contrast other types of schools, not to harm anybody, but just have a comparison on what they're doing and what they're getting and what we do and what we give. You know, so just keep that in mind. And there is a standards that Terry Marino had spearheaded, and which makes a lot of sense. And that's another whole subject we could talk about. So there's a lot
Absolutely.
Of stuff. And I'm grateful for the opportunity. I sincerely thank you.
You're welcome, Greg. Thank you very much. And just a reminder to everyone that 2 weeks, March 20th, we'll have Mary Aquindo going over disaster and first aid and emergency planning for your pet operations. And Mary's a great speaker, and she really knows this very well. She's actually a first aid instructor. So look into that show 2 weeks from today, March 20th, same time. Thank you, Greg.
My absolute pleasure.
Bye-bye.